WZZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. Thoughts on the latest Trump pick ahead of a federal agency? Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has been tapped to be Health and Human Services Secretary.
RFK Jr., you know, we'd know he's an environmental lawyer, but he also made a name for himself as a prominent vaccine skeptic, spreading misinformation. So this is the cause of some alarm amongst public health officials when it comes to this nomination.
ABC News Medical Unit Coordinating Producer Sonny Salzman. The president-elect held a big gala at Mar-a-Lago last night to celebrate his White House win, announcing another pick, North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum, for Interior Secretary. He's known as a champion of the oil industry. A Texas man is under arrest, accused of supporting ISIS and plotting a mass casualty terror attack. Anas Saeed was taken into custody in Houston on Thursday. The world's most polluting cities released at the COP29 UN Climate Summit in Azerbaijan include Shanghai, Tokyo, New York, and Houston. This is ABC News. A jury in the trial of a Marine vet facing manslaughter charges in New York getting a chance to see exactly what he told police after a deadly encounter on the subway.
Jurors heard Daniel Penny in his own words, watching video as he demonstrated on a detective the chokehold that killed Jordan Neely.
He was acting like a lunatic, like a crazy person.
It happened in May of 23. Penny, a former Marine trained in hand-to-hand combat, says he was just trying to protect fellow strap hangers when Jordan Neely got on and started threatening people. The medical examiner ruled Neely, who was unarmed and had a history of mental illness, died from compression to the neck.
That's ABC's Josh Einiger here in New York. And the FBI is trying to figure out how many banks were hit by a gang of West Coast robbers who used some convincing costumes. The thieves dressed up like construction workers and used tools like jackhammers to cut into vaults and ATMs. They took at least $4 million before they were busted. Sherry Preston, ABC News.
I'm James Kelly with WBZH News. Your news roundup in quick podcast form. Find it anytime on the WBZH website at buzzofthenorth.com.
Not completing high school is more of a social thing than it was an academic thing. Even though all these years have passed, I still had that longing to have my diploma.
At age 30, Carissa finished her high school diploma.
If you're even considering getting your high school diploma, you can do it.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
The Dom Salvia Show.
State Senator-elect Jody Habesh-Sinikin. What's the best way, do you think, it is to approach a difference in not just opinion, but in what we perceive as facts with those that may not be aware or don't agree with it?
First, having a conversation. Try to get an understanding of what is really bothering them and try to offer solutions at the state level or at the local level where there can be progress.
The Dom Salvia Show. Weekdays from 4 till 6 on the Civic Media Radio Network and on the Civic Media app.
Still waiting for Chris. I'm Mike Clemens with sports. NBA, the Bucks head to Charlotte to take on the Hornets tomorrow night. Milwaukee now 4-8. The Hornets are 4-7. Chris Middleton is yet to play after surgery this summer on both of his ankles. Head coach Doc Rivers on whether there's a growing frustration regarding Middleton.
No. I mean, obviously we want Chris to play, but Chris is doing all the work. He's working his butt off. That's all. You know, as a coach, that's all you can ask for. And we were hoping we were going to be healthy, but we're not. And there's nothing you can do about it.
Men's college basketball should be a special night tonight at the Kohl Center as the Badgers honor Hall of Fame coach Bo Ryan and members of the 2014-15 team that went on to the Final Four. Meanwhile, the Badgers had their work cut out for them, hosting Arizona, the number 9th ranked team in the nation.
Now we've got a tremendous test coming at us on Friday. You know, an extremely big team, an experienced team. Caleb Love backed one of the guard positions, put a lot of pressure on the rim. Obviously a really, really good team.
That's Badgers head coach Greg Gard. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba, who's up for a good old-fashioned boxing match. Jake Paul and Mike Tyson square off this weekend. Paul took to his social media platforms to troll Tyson by wearing diamond-spiked ear covers to get under the former champ's skin. The dig is from when Tyson bit Evander Holyfield's ear years ago. Not allowed in boxing. Paul is the odds-on favorite to win the fight. According to odds makers, Paul is the odds-on favorite due to the fact that Tyson hasn't fought in 19 years, has been near death due to illness more than once, and is more than twice Paul's age. Come on, Iron Mike. Sometimes people struggle after they retire. This appears to be the case for actress Cameron Diaz, who is ending her 11-year hiatus from show business. Diaz has been cast opposite Jamie Foxx in the Netflix spy movie called Back in Action, a comedy thriller. The duo previously starred together in the film Annie. Back in Action drops January 17th on Netflix. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Peach Wabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
It is going to be a nice weekend, and you're going to want to get out and enjoy it because things are going to start to go downhill next week. Today, partly cloudy, 50. Tonight, 32. Tomorrow, windy, partly cloudy, 52. On Sunday, sunshine, high of 47. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable.
Currently, it's 42.
Maggie Dawn.
Do you need some good news? I know I do. Next, I'll be joined by Terry Barr for what's good, local, and overlooked in Wisconsin.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekday afternoons from 2 till 4.
You're listening to the Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Nightlight with Peach Wabba.
Good morning, Wisconsin. You are listening to Civic Media Mornings. I'm your host for this Friday morning, November 15th. My name is Luke Mathers, filling in for Mr. Pat Kreitlow and Up North News Radio, which will return to these airwaves this upcoming Monday at 6 a.m. I want to thank the excellent fill-in hosts earlier this week for Civic Media Mornings. We had Mr. Todd Alba in the chair on Monday and Tuesday, doing a phenomenal job, as well as Mr. Matt Rothschild filling in yesterday and Wednesday of this week. If you want to join the show and share your thoughts on this Friday morning, we want to hear them. 855-752-4842. That's 855-752-4842. I'm joined on this Friday morning by one Mr. Gregory Bach. Greg, how are we doing on this Friday morning?
I'm doing grand. You know, it's Friday. It's lovely. We're here. The weekend is sort of here.
It's sort of here. We got one more day to get through. And then, yes, it's the weekend. For some folks, I'm sure it's already the weekend. And for others, their week's just getting started. So wherever you are in your weekly journey, we're thrilled to be with you this morning. And going to share some a very fun show. I'm excited. We're going to be joined by Civic Media's Jimmy Koska coming up later in this hour to discuss the referendum that were on the ballot. So a lot of focus last week on the top of the ticket, the presidential race, the U.S. Senate race. But down the ballot, Wisconsinites around the entire state were asked questions about funding projects for their local communities that could range anywhere from the school district to the roads to just general operating taxes, and whether or not they wanted to raise their own property taxes to address some of those problems. Communities from the northern part of the state all the way to the southern, all across Wisconsin, Wisconsinites went to the ballot box, and overwhelmingly, about 78% of these ballot referendums passed. But there's going to be some major questions in those communities where they did not about what comes next. So Civic Media's Jimmy Koska going to be joining us at the bottom of this 6 o'clock hour to dive a little bit more into that. We're going to have some fun. I'm going to do my best Pat Kreitlow impersonation or impression, I guess, is really what it's going to be, Greg. I'm a big fan of the history segment that Pat does every single morning. And so I took a crack at assembling my own. So you the listener, will have to be the judge of how well of a job I've done when it comes to later at the end of this hour. Next hour, we're going to get our weather update from Brittany Merlot, meteorologist here at Civic Media. And we'll be joined by host of Amicus, a law review on the weekends here at Civic Media, Jim Santel, as well. But again, if you want to join us at any point in the show, those phone lines are open. 855-752-4842. You can also engage with the show, give us a call, send us a text right through the Civic Media app. It's free. It's easy to download. So download it wherever you download apps on your smart devices. You can head over to the Apple App Store or the Google Play Store. But Greg, this one, I'm going to start off the morning here with the headline that we're almost beyond satire, which made yesterday's news, I guess, that much funnier.
Yeah,
I'm not sure exactly how I felt. I thought it was a joke when I saw it at first. And folks, if you don't know what I'm referencing, that's okay, because it's hard right now with a lead like that to know what's going on anywhere, because most of the headlines feel like satire these days.
Everyone in Radio Land's like, what is he talking about? I can't take it anymore. Give me the scoop.
Which crazy story could Luke and Greg be referencing? And that's the hard part. And I fear, Greg, going forward, that's kind of going to be the case. There's going to be a, hey, did you hear that crazy story? And then you're going to have to respond to that question anytime you hear it as, well, can you be more specific, please?
Well, and that's, I mean, I feel like that's going to be a familiar replay from 2016 to 2020, where you're like, did you hear what the president said? Which thing are you referring to?
Which one are you referencing here? Because that's not a very easy litmus test to understand, really.
No.
But the big one, in the realm of satire that I saw yesterday, the headline, The Onion's decision to buy InfoWars started as a joke. It's their most expensive gag yet. This is over at New York Magazine's. And I thought that was kind of the interesting spin on it, Greg, because if you're terminally online, like I try not to be, but I still somehow find a way to be, you may or may not have known a number of months back when the federal court that was ordering the defamation lawsuit, that was overseeing the defamation lawsuit of Alex Jones and InfoWars against the families of Sandy Hook, the Sandy Hook families of survivors, that Alex Jones for years would defamed. Mm-hmm. And now we know that through this court order. But he insisted that they were crisis actors, that they made it up, that it was a conspiracy, and really harmed these families.
Yeah.
And so going through the
what the heck?
Alex Jones and the InfoWars company insisted that they didn't have the money. They were filing bankruptcy. There was going to be a question of how the monetary sum, which nears $1 billion, was going to be paid out to these families. And so through a court-ordered auction, InfoWars went up for sale.
Mm-hmm.
And online, it started out as a joke. The folks that brought The Onion back, it was originally founded here in Wisconsin, Madison, Wisconsin, as the satirical. There we go.
Yeah.
It's early in the morning, folks. You are listening to Civic Media Mornings. I'm filling
oh,
in.
What Luke a plug.
Mathers, in for Mr. Pat Kreitlow, who will return your Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow this upcoming Monday, November 18th. But it started out as the newspaper here in Madison, Wisconsin. It went on to the online. It is known for its satirical news. And the owner, the current owner, online earlier this year kind of floated the idea, or some of the folks on the internet floated the idea of The Onion purchasing InfoWars when it was known that it was going to go up for auction. And Greg, it kind of seems like one of those things where it started out as a joke, but yesterday it happened.
Yeah.
And it is it's going to be pretty interesting to see what comes next.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think The Onion's going to do with its newly acquired InfoWars?
Well, first of all, okay, a couple of things. This was wonderful for me personally. For those who don't know, I am a comedian. I'm a comedy writer. I love satire. I love satire specifically. Good political, sociological satire is the best when it's written correctly.
And what makes you love it?
The way that it can read like stereo instructions, boring, as mm-hmm. a lot of political things can be, sociological, business type of satire, and then you just throw words in there that just twist the wrench a little bit and make it funny. Satire should be funny without trying to be funny. It should never wink at the camera. It should always have a bold, stern look at the people while saying some of the most ridiculous, incongruous things towards their topics possible. That's how I feel about it. Monty Python.
I love satire just because it's, you got to be in on the joke.
Yes.
Like to me, it's you gotta understand, like it doesn't always come across.
Yeah.
As subtly, like sometimes it can be very difficult to pick up on satire.
Yeah, you have to assume a level of intelligence of your audience to do satire mm-hmm. and to do it well. Mm-hmm. What I love about it, this whole thing is, I was same thing. I saw it yesterday morning, and I had to look twice, rub my eyes, and go, "What?" And I'm really hoping, because they're working with the families of the victims, gave up a certain amount of their settlement to make sure this could happen. I'm hoping they use that website actually as a satirical look at like conspiracy theories, all the things that, you know, are the underbelly of American culture. And I really want, and this is a deep cut, this is a Milwaukee thing. So if you're listening to Milwaukee, probably not because we're up north, but there's a bar called Wolski's, and their famous thing is having a sticker that says "I closed Wolski's." I want them to have a sticker that said "I closed InfoWars."
That would be a pretty good first piece of merch.
Yeah, especially with the Wisconsin tie, that which the Onion does have. And the great thing about the Onion too is the current owners are artists. They bought it from like I don't know if it was a hedge fund or a
some larger
some entity
whatever tried entity to purchased it previously from the original owners, and so it's an interesting dynamic of how the Onion has got to where it is, and now they acquired InfoWars.
It's
gonna be really interesting, and they get all of the intellectual property, my understanding from this sale of InfoWars. So it's like Alex Jones, the former host of InfoWars, does not get any of that intellectual property. They get the studio. They get all of the equipment. Hey, if you're looking for a Wisconsin connection to, donate some of that equipment to, we'd love to know. We should talk more with the new owners.
Well, and that's the thing too, is maybe they even with an investment, start their own version of InfoWars.
It will be interesting to see what comes next in those steps, but just so fitting for the news cycle that we're currently in and all of the headlines. The Onion purchasing InfoWars yesterday. Folks, you are listening to Civic Media Mornings. I'm your host for this Friday, November 15th. Luke Mathers, filling in for Mr. Pat Kreitlow, joined by Mr. Gregory Bach on the board. And you can join us on the phone lines or the text lines, 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. Or you can download the Civic Media app and join us through there. We got a lot more headlines to get through, as well as coming up, we're going to be joined at the bottom of the hour by Civic Media's Jimmy Koska to discuss the referendum around Wisconsin last week. Stay tuned.
The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH. The Maggie Dawn Show.
It is absolutely disgusting for conservatives to suggest that because someone is poor or struggling, that they lack judgment. If anybody needs morality policing, it's rich folks, for crying out loud, not people who are struggling to put food on the table and keep a roof over their heads.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Mike Siegel joins us now to make our popcorn pick of the week. Hey, Mike.
When I was a kid in the 70s, there was no Walmart. There was no right. Sears was everything, from our tools to all our back-to-school clothes, everything else. Right?
Pants, stereos, kitchen appliances. Do you have pantyhose? Yeah, they're right next to power tools on the second floor. It's like you really could get everything there.
Everything.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Doctors Without Borders is delivering life-saving medical care where it's needed most in communities around the world. From bandaging war-wounded patients in Sudan to providing clean drinking water in Haiti, we're in more than 70 countries worldwide, bringing patients from sick to recovering, from emergency to aid, from crisis to care. This life-saving care is made possible by a global movement of supporters like you. Thank you.
It's easy to listen to your favorite local radio station anytime. Download the Civic Media app from the Apple or Google Play Store, then listen live or whenever you want from anywhere for free.
That first time seeing my son, I feel like my life did a 180. He really a definition of like why he loves somebody.
Through all the fatherhood's firsts, never stop being a dad. Visit fatherhood.gov to hear more. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
This is the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
From this moment, life has begun. From this moment, you are the one right beside you.
Welcome back to Civic Media Mornings. I'm Luke Mathers, filling in for Mr. Pat Frilo on this Friday morning. Pat will return to the airwaves coming up Monday morning, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, well-rested from his time out of the host chair. But he will return Monday morning at 6 a.m. I am joined by Greg Bach and you on the phone lines, 855-752-4842. You can call or text all morning long if you'd like to join the show here on Civic Media Mornings. A little Shania Twain to get the morning started. A little bit more about why Shania is being played coming up on today's history lesson at the end of the hour. And we're also going to be joined coming up here at the bottom of the hour, just after 6:30, by Civic Media's Jimmy Koska, talking about the ballot referendum, which ones passed, which ones didn't, and what comes next for those Wisconsin communities now that we are post-election. Now that we are post-election, there's a lot of different things going on. This headline as well caught my eyes, wanted to share it with you. The outlet VoteBeat has excellent coverage of communities across the nation. They have outlets in states around the country, including here in Wisconsin. And now that we're beyond the November election, it's time to look forward and see what comes next for the state. And over at VoteBeat, an interesting piece written up by Alexander Schur discussing what comes next for the top election official in Wisconsin, because there's going to be a court case working its way up to the Wisconsin Supreme Court about Megan Wolf, the chair of the Wisconsin Elections Commission, of what her role is, because it expired, and it expired back in 2023. Greg, I'm a little torn on this one.
Yeah.
Because Megan Wolf was allowed to stay in her position because of a rule set by Frederick Prent. Folks, if you're not familiar with that name, no one would fault you. Frederick Prenn is a dentist, retired dentist in the Wausau area, who served on the Wisconsin Natural Resources Board. But following the fact that, it was leading up to the reelection of Governor Tony Evers. So back in 2021 to 2022, before Evers was reelected, Frederick Prehn was the deciding majority vote on that board. The Wisconsin Natural Resources Board sets environmental policy for the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. So this board oversees things like PFAS regulations, other environmental protections, like what the state was supposed to do after the federal government removed the gray wolf from the endangered species list. Things like that. Not necessarily the core sexiest political issues like inflation or abortion that were discussed at every election cycle, it really feels like, but very key to how environmental policy gets set and then implemented here in the state of Wisconsin. And Frederick Prehn was appointed to that board by former Governor Scott Walker, who happens to be a Republican. And Frederick Prehn coordinated with members of the state Senate, their staffers, special interest groups, including at Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, which is the state's largest business interest. So the folks that advocate for business, that make it easier for, I don't know, say polluters with PFAS to get away from, you know, having any responsibility for cleaning up PFAS chemicals, those forever chemicals that we're finding in communities across Wisconsin. Frederick Prehn was coordinating with folks over there and in the state Senate who's responsible for confirming appointments to the Natural Resources Board to say, well, if you read the law one way, I don't have to step down from this position. Because if Frederick Prehn, when his term ended, would have stepped down, it would have meant that Governor Tony Evers, a Democrat, got to appoint his replacement and then therefore have a majority of appointees from Evers to make up that environmental policy on the Natural Resources Board. Fast forward about a year. This goes on. It works its way all the way up to the Wisconsin Supreme Court. And then a conservative 4-3 majority upheld, saying that Frederick Prehn does not have to leave, that until his appointment is confirmed by the state Senate, which he was coordinating with. Frederick Prehn, it doesn't actually constitute an absence. The end of a term doesn't create an absence. The end of a term only comes when the replacement is confirmed by the state Senate. So Frederick Prehn got to stay. Governor Evers wins re-election. It's pretty obvious that Frederick Prehn's not going to hold over for 4 more years. So he quietly resigns then. Says, hey, you know what? I'm done being a holdout on the Department of the Wisconsin Natural Resources Board. So now there's the Fred Prehn precedent. And Megan Wolf, who did not get confirmed, even though reappointed, nationally lauded as an expert when it comes to elections administration across the country. State Senate doesn't want to confirm her to another term, but she stayed on because the Fred Prehn precedent. And so now we are going to be to a point of what comes next. Are Republicans in the Wisconsin State Senate willing to confirm and a qualified appointee by the governor here in Wisconsin to serve and continue to serve as the administrator for the Wisconsin elections? Or does she need to keep using the Fred Prehn precedent and stay on only because of that? And so, Greg, this piece over at VoteBeat, folks, if you haven't had a chance to dive into it, this is going to be one of those struggles in the upcoming weeks and months about how elections are secured here in Wisconsin and administered going forward. And whether or not we can get beyond this partisan bickering of should we or should we not confirm an appointee by the governor so that our state can run like it's supposed to. Folks, you're listening to Civic Media Mornings. I'm Luke Mathers, filling in for Mr. Pat Kreitlow here on the Civic Media Airwaves. If you want to join the conversation, give us a call. Send us a text, 855-752-4842. We're going to be joined by Civic Media's Jimmy Koska talking about school referendums coming up next.
You're listening to WBZH, Hayward's home for the Todd Allball Show. local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
Sitting down with your accountant, banker, and agronomist and looking at ways to become more efficient is going to be key as we end the year. That's according to agricultural banker Jeff Wilkie of Green Bay. I'm Charity Seebecker for the Midwest Farm Report. And Wilkie is the chair of the agricultural banking section within the Wisconsin Bankers Association. He tells us what adjustments you might want to make this year to save on tax liability.
I think on the grain side, I don't think they're going to have to do a lot of prepaying for tax reasons just because of where their income is going to be. On the dairy side, that could be a little different, you know, with milk prices rebounding quite a bit here in this second half of the year. Looking at maybe doing some prepaying to lock in some discounts and at the same time maybe be able to use it as a tool for reducing that tax liability might certainly make sense. But again, I think it's sitting down with the accountant and really seeing what opportunities there are.
We'll look at your morning markets right after this.
Now's the time to get right with Pivot Bio Nitrogen. The right source, at the right rate, at the right time, in the right place. Sounds good, right? And now is the right time to act. With zero payments, zero interest, and zero worry. Until December 1st, 2025, on the best source of nitrogen. Get right with Pivot Bio. For more information, visit PivotsProvenIt.com. That's PivotsProvenIt.com.
No one should have to navigate herd health alone. Luckily, you don't have to. A successful operation requires teamwork. Visit bio-vet.com and let us help identify key challenges and offer expert solutions unique to your situation. We evaluate your full herd health plan and make economical recommendations to your operation. Learn more about our team and products for herd health at bio-vet.com.
Innovation.
I'm Charity Seebecker for the Midwest Farm Report with a look at your agribusiness news. The Adamski family of Seymour has been awarded the prestigious 2024 Wisconsin Leopold Conservation Award for their outstanding commitment to sustainable farming and conservation. Their Full Circle Farm, a 240-acre operation in Shawano County, uses managed grazing to maintain soil health, water retention, and carbon sequestration. Rick Adamski and Valerie Dantoin prioritize environmentally friendly practices, including rotational grazing, organic certification, and diverse wildlife habitats. Their son Andrew contributes to regenerative practices and a CSA business that serves 1,000 people weekly. This award honors their dedication to Aldo Leopold's land ethic and recognizes their role as leaders in conservation and sustainable agriculture. For the Midwest Farm Report, I'm Charity Seebecker.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
It is going to be a nice weekend, and you're going to want to get out and enjoy it because things are going to start to go downhill next week. Today, partly cloudy, 50. Tonight, 32. Tomorrow, windy, partly cloudy, 52. On Sunday, sunshine, high of 47. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Outside now, it's 40.
The Todd Alba Show.
Managing editor of E-Bombs World, Mr. Peter Rapine.
Google this week released a new product, the new AI Overview. If you Google search, can I use gasoline to cook spaghetti? Google says, no, you can't use it to cook spaghetti, but you can use gasoline to make spicy spaghetti dishes.
Not recommended. Do not do that.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
What I know about courage, I learned from my adoptive mom. She said sometimes you just gotta hold on and know we'll get through this.
Mom, we are so high up. Hold my hand.
No, you hold my hand.
Here we go.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more. This message is brought to you by AdoptUSKids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, a little more recombobulating with Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation Area. We'll wrap up the show with a Friday This Shouldn't Be a Thing. I hope you can join us.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings at 10.
Welcome back to Civic Media Mornings. I'm your host for this Friday, November 15th. I'm Luke Mathers. Got Mr. Gregory Bach on the board, and Mr. Pat Krylo will return on Monday, 6 a.m. Bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, well-rested from his time out of the host chair. And right now, we are joined by Civic Media's Jimmy Koska talking school referendum, community referendum. There was referendum questions. This catches me off guard, Jimmy. Is it referendum? Is it referendi? Is it referendums? I've heard multiple different, like, I feel like I'm doing it wrong when I say referendums. Is it plural like deer, or is it, how have you been covering this issue?
I've been saying referendums, although I think referenda might be the right way. But, you know, I think colloquially, I think we're good saying referendums because that's how people understand these things. And there's a lot of them. I mean, we had 138 questions on ballots last week. So, like, you know, I think people have seen these and they understand what they are at this point. But yeah, there certainly were a lot of them this time around.
So this isn't as much like a tariff where everybody after the fact is like, what is a tariff kind of thing? This is you're pretty confident that the communities across Wisconsin understand what the referendums were and what they meant for their communities.
Yeah, I think people know that when a school is asking in a referendum question what it's about. Schools are looking for funding either to pay for a facility project, or they're looking for an operational question to help pay for staff salaries or help pay for programming, keep the lights on, essentially. And they understand that the consequence of that, right, if you approve it, is that you are asking to exceed your tax levy. So you're voting to essentially raise property taxes in your district. And that is the only mechanism schools have to increase revenue because, you know, famously, public schools can't charge tuition. So this is how public schools have the lever they have to pull in order to pay for big projects like adding a new building, renovating a building, or in the case of a lot of them this time around, consolidating buildings due to declining enrollment. Well, if your enrollment is shrinking, you still have to do something with the old buildings. You still have to make sure that the buildings you're moving kids into is suitable for the people you're bringing in. And a number of projects, including the big one in Madison, a $507 million project, sought to address some of that by, you know, taking, you know, a certain number of buildings perhaps and renovating them to fit more students. So in Madison's case, going from dealing with 10 buildings, 10 school buildings, and making 7 of them, you know, for teaching. LaCrosse had the same thing, trying to take 5 elementary schools and converting it down to 3, because schools are largely across the board are doing these projects to deal with aging infrastructure and, of course, declining enrollment.
And so we saw a large battle last year at the state level when it came to addressing shared revenue and what shared revenue meant for local communities. I think part of those discussions when we were having them last year with shared revenue and those formulas changing was the hope was communities would have to go to a ballot referendum to increase the operating budgets for schools a little less frequently with the fixes in the shared revenue formula. Jimmy, more than 130 ballot measures being approved last week seems like maybe the shared revenue fix didn't fully address this problem, or do you think there's going to be a steady decline in how many of these referendums voters will have going forward now that the shared revenue, because sometimes it just takes some time for a big change like the changes to shared revenue to address these community concerns?
There's not a short answer to this question. I will say that we do have a piece at civicmedia.us that addresses all of these questions.
There we go.
So I just want to make sure that our listeners get that.
Yeah, with the plug.
Response to all this. So
excellent, excellent plug. Yeah.
I did spend a lot of time putting it together because these are great questions about what it means. Well, I'll just start with this. Here's the facts. Voters in the last calendar year, the 4 elections, the 2 primaries, the 2 elections, approved a record $4.4 billion in referenda taxpayer money going towards school districts. That shatters the old record of $2.7 billion. So the answer to it is slowing down is no. The answer is that things are actually progressing quite rapidly. We had 138 questions from 120 districts just in the fall. And we had over the course of the year, you know, over 230 ballot measures go up. So you're talking about a system in which pretty much every district at this point of the state has had to go to referendum. Entering this year, 10% of districts were getting a significant portion of their operating money from referendum dollars. So what it means is that they have gone to referendum in the past to exceed tax levies each year. And now a significant part, 10% in some cases, and a few districts cases, 25% or more of all the money they get is coming from a referendum of some kind to pay for things like staff salaries, to pay for, you know, utilities, things like that. So there's obviously a great need for funding in the school. And I think that has been directly addressed by the Department of Public Instruction, which just put out the call this week with Jill Underley, Dr. Underley, who in the past 2 weeks has put out a number of things that they want included in the next biennial budget, to the tune of essentially using the entire state surplus to pay for public education. And when you look at how much was approved just this year, you're talking over $4 billion, that's with a B, dollars, and the state surplus conveniently being about the same amount. I don't think it's unjustified. I don't think it's too crazy of an ask. And when you look at where the biggest expense is, you're talking about the students you need the most in Wisconsin, and that is special education, where they're seeking a public school reimbursement rate of 90%. In the ask, I know a lot of lobbyists, a lot of groups that tied to education are just trying to get to 60, because right now the rate is right around 33%, and that's not nearly enough. And just quickly, the reason why the special education reimbursement rate matters is that right now schools, especially in small districts like the one I live in, when the cost for special education exceeds what you're being reimbursed at, well, there's only one other way you can get that money, and that's to pull from your general fund, which covers everything in your district. So it affects every student and every department. It affects the entire budget when you don't have enough money for special education. And for a lot of districts, that's the case. They have to pull from general funds for that.
Folks, you are listening to Civic Media Mornings. I'm your host for this Friday, November 15th. I'm Luke Mathers. I'm joined by Civic Media's Jimmy Koska discussing the ballot referendum questions that went out for funding public schools, for funding communities in general at large, last week's November election. Jimmy, it seems that you hit it right on the nose there with the fact that we have this state surplus that has been a state surplus for, I feel like we've been talking about the multi-billion dollar state surplus for several years now. Like this is a fund of money here in Wisconsin that Republicans took a gamble on in 2021 and 2022, saying we think that we're going to get an ally in the governor's mansion after 2022. We're gonna put the odds down that Tony Evers doesn't get reelected, and we can try to use that surplus for a tax cut. And that gamble failed. Voters here in Wisconsin reelected Tony Evers in what surmounts to a Wisconsin landslide, about three times the margin that he originally got elected in 2018. And so since his reelection, Governor Evers has been working to try to say, hey, let's use the surplus for this. Let's use the surplus for this. And has been met time and time again with no from the Republican-led Wisconsin legislature. What are your thoughts on the changes that came along with all of these approvals of ballot referendum last week? The smaller margins that the Republican majorities now have after these first elections on fairer maps, do you think that public education is one of those areas where lawmakers and the governor can find some common ground and address these concerns, where we're seeing voters say, hey, we want these things. We need these services. We want our public schools to have the resources. We're going to raise our own property taxes. But instead, going forward, maybe saying, let's not raise our property taxes. Let's just get a little bit more support from the state.
You know, I think we saw kind of the first step in this, and you can call it a compromise, you can call it whatever you want, but the last biennial budget saw not only an increase in per student funding, raising, you know, the low revenue holds, things like that, just a few measures to help with some of the issues public schools have, but you also saw a massive increase in what is being used for private school vouchers or choice, you know, parent choice schools. So that you saw that in the last biennial budget. You also saw, which is currently being litigated, the governor using his partial veto to not only fund 2 years of the biennial budget of a per student increase in funding, he crossed out a few characters and made it so that it's now a 402-year increase in that. That is actually still being currently debated right now in the courtroom, whether or not that will stand as a test of the partial veto powers in Wisconsin. I think that when you look at the Republican side of things, that they control the Joint Committee on Finance, and that's where all this kind of goes through, right? So if any of these budget proposals are ever going to make it, you're going to have to get it through that committee, right? It's a very powerful committee, and we've seen time and time again how many fights there are between the governor and the Joint Committee on Finance to get anything done. And time and time again, we're seeing, you know, in some cases, they just pocket the funding and don't do anything with it. We're seeing it even just with an education topic like the new reading mandate, right? There's an unfunded mandate right now because the money hasn't been released. We've seen it with other things. We've seen it with conservation. We've seen it with, you know, just name a category, and it's probably happened, right? But when it comes to the biennial budget in education, there's not a lot of appetite by Republicans to say, well, we're going to use the surplus and just move it in education. First of all, it's a big ask, right? There's a lot of money being asked for here. And second of all, there's a lot of competing asks for that surplus money. The UW system, for example, is looking for nearly $1 billion. Evers is trying to get the child care credits funded, the federal child care credits funded, the pandemic era credits that have expired that they have found stopgaps for. Same thing for the Office of School Safety, which just this week said, hey, we had a record number, a 40% increase in 1 year calls to the service. And that was unfunded, right? Or, you know, that's been done through legislation to keep that going. That's another pandemic era program that had to be continued. So I'm not confident that you're going to see a biennial budget with Republican support for a massive increase in public education spending. But I do think that this last cycle, showing that there was an increase for per student, for that low revenue hold, things like that, to try to address some of the issue in declining enrollment in Wisconsin. I do think that the boulder started to budge in a way, to use a metaphor, but I'm not confident that you're going to see a $3 billion increase in public education spending appear on a budget anytime soon.
No, but that's probably one of those starting off points where the Secretary of Public Instruction, Jill Underly, Dr. Jill Underly, wants it as the starting point so that through the negotiations, we see where it goes. And you were recently on the Civic Media exclusive podcast, Busted Pencils, with Dr. Tim and Dr. Johnny talking about this subject as well. If listeners want to learn more about that conversation, they can head over to the Civic Media website, check out the Busted Pencils podcast. You can also subscribe and download to that podcast wherever you get your podcasts, Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, Google, or YouTube now, I believe, is the home for Google's podcasts. It's all changing landscape, folks. Jimmy, we only got a couple of minutes here left. You say no signs of ramping down anytime. What are your predictions for what ballot referendum questions may look like, or at least the volume may look like next year when we've got not as much focus on the political cycle that we had here in 2024?
Well, here's the thing. Public schools could put a referendum up anytime they want, but they almost always time it with a primary or an election, because then you don't have to pay for it as a district. You don't have to pay for the poll workers and everything like that. So what you're going to see next year is that with only two chances that you don't have to pay for everything on your own on the ballot, you're going to see a bunch of them in February in the primary and a bunch of them in April in the general election, because there's no fall election next year. So you only have two chances at this already. If you look in your communities, you're seeing special meetings. If your district is considering one, they already have this on the agenda. In fact, I've seen places like Oshkosh that they already are talking about putting referendums up for next year. So it is happening now. You can get involved. Check your local district website. You can usually find a tab called referendum. And if your school district is considering one of these, it's certainly there. They've also probably sent you a survey at some point as well.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Jimmy. It's that Civic Media's Jimmy Koska. I'm Luke Mathers for Civic Media Mornings. We're going to continue with today's history lesson coming up next.
The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
In business, service is everything. Cintas delivers what you need to better serve your customers.
Whether it's freshly laundered work apparel for almost any job imaginable, tested and inspected fire protection systems, first aid and safety supplies, on-site AED training, or mops and restroom products, stocked and ready when you need them. Better work days happen together. So visit Cintas.com.
Oh, I'm ready!
And get ready for the workday.
Hey there, it's Carrie Joy, and today's Work Money word is fiduciary. Well, fiduciary is a mega important term that you gotta know when it comes to getting professional financial advice. In the world of money, you want someone committed to the fiduciary standard because those folks are legally obligated to act in your best interest only. I mean, every other broker or advisor or banker who has not specifically committed to the fiduciary standard and told you that that's what they're doing, those folks don't have that obligation. They could be selling you products or encouraging you to invest in things or put your money in places that end up helping their wallet even more than yours. So simply put, anytime that you are hiring a financial advisor, ask them if they uphold the fiduciary standard. For me and mine, fiduciary advisors are the only ones I'm trusting my money to. That was your Work Money Minute. For more, check out workmoney.org. This is Carrie Joy saying, take good care.
The Dom Salvia Show.
I had somebody recently, one of the classes I was teaching, saying to me, I don't do politics, Mr. Santel. I don't spend all my time watching MSNBC and reading the opinion columns. I get that.
You might not do politics, but sooner or later, politics is going to do you. Yeah. You got to have some basic level of understanding of what government is about and how it functions and a little bit of the history of it.
You need to do enough.
The Dom Salvia Show. Weekdays from 4 till 6 on the Civic Media Radio Network and on the Civic Media app. This is the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
When the truth is found to be lies, and all the joy within you dies, don't you want somebody to...
Welcome back to Civic Media Mornings. I'm Luke Mathers, filling in for Mr. Pat Freitlow. He will return on Monday morning for Up North News Radio with Pat Freitlow from 6 to 8 a.m., which you can listen across these Civic Media radio stations too. Again, a big thanks to Mr. Todd Alba and Matt Rothschild for filling in earlier this week for Pat here on Civic Media Mornings. I'm Luke Mathers, thrilled to be with you. I got Greg Bach, and we've got some today's history lesson. This is, honestly, Greg, one of my favorite segments that Pat does.
Yeah.
Just without fail, going through what has occurred on this day, November 15th, throughout history. Listen there to some Jefferson Airplane, who recorded Somebody to Love on this day in 1966.
The most aggressive love song in history. Just like, when the truth gets found, three lies. Don't you want somebody to love, guys? Don't you want someone to love?
Hey, everybody displays their love in different ways. Yeah. And I think this is a good one. It's a good love song. I don't think every love song needs to be sappy or kind of lovey-dovey. I think it's a good representation of finding somebody to love.
There you go.
On this date in 1926, the first network radio broadcast, 4.5 hours of varied programs and performances from New York's Waldorf Astoria Hotel and other remotes around the country, airs on the new National Broadcasting Company, soon to be known as NBC. Do you believe that NBC in 1926, 98 years ago,
wow,
first broadcast on NBC?
That's so cool. And I just love the idea back in the day. It's like, you know, Memorial Washing Powders brings you National Broadcast. Like, it's just like all those like very straightforward names of products instead of nowadays where they're trying to get you with like cool respellings and whatnot. It's like, who is this? This is the National Broadcasting Company. What do you do? It's in the name.
It's very clear. We are a broadcasting company that is national. Come on. NBC, yes, but having their first network radio broadcast on this day, 1926. Nice. In 1968, a Russell Jones was born in Brooklyn, New York, later become the rapper from Wu-Tang Clan, Old Dirty, I'm not going to go that far this morning because it's a morning program and Wu-Tang is for the children.
Let's just say this. He goes by the nickname ODB, a.k.a. Big Baby Jesus, a.k.a. Russell Jones. Rest in peace.
Yes. And he was born this day, 1968. A little bit later birthday for 1974, 6 years later, the front man, Chad Kroeger of Nickelback, was born in Alberta, Canada. Yep, it was on my 2024 bingo card to get a little Nickelback on the airwaves for filling in for Pat Kreitlow one day. It just perfectly worked out that I didn't have to use it as bumper music. We could do it on today's history lesson. Chad Kroeger, born in Alberta, Canada, this day, 1974. 1996, the movie Space Jam debuted starring Michael Jordan and Bugs Bunny, opening in theaters. The soundtrack went on to sell over 6 million copies. It says the soundtrack thanks mostly to the opening song, R. Kelly's I Believe I Can Fly. And Greg, I just
never heard
felt,
of him.
You know, we're just not going to play it. So we'll acknowledge it, but we're not going to play it.
I'm fine with that.
In 2004, we get an album, Come On Over by Shania Twain.
Oh, baby.
Let's go, girls.
I feel like when she's saying let's go, girl, she's also talking to the girl inside of everyone so we can all relate.
Oh, very few, like, iconic intros is that. Yeah. Just hearing the dun, 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 like, that's, you know what you're getting with that album. So 2004, Come On Over is certified double diamond by the RIAA. With over 20 million copies sold in the U.S., it is just the seventh album to do so, and the only female artist. That was in 2004, Shania Twain's. I have a feeling the next artist that we're going to talk about here then may give Shania a run for her money one day here when it comes to those diamond ratings on the album. In 2002, this day, 2002, Ticketmaster crashed, Greg, because the Eras Tour tickets went on sale and Taylor Swift crashed Ticketmaster. And so in 2022, there were a lot of folks that weren't really feeling it, but you know, let's give it to the people anyways. Cannot believe this was already 2 years ago that Ticketmaster went down. Time is irrelevant. It's a flat circle. There's no way that we've done two more revolutions around the sun since that one. But the Eras Tour crashing Ticketmaster this day, November 15th, 2022. Some notable birthdays real quickly here. We got Georgia O'Keeffe was born in Sun Prairie, Wisconsin on this day in 1887. Sam Waterston of Stage and Screen, known as Jack McCoy on Law and Order, and Charlie Skinner on The Newsroom was born in 1940. So happy 84th birthday to Sam Waterston and the wrestler Randy Savage, born this day in 1952.
Real name Randy Poffo.
There you go. I did not know that. Yeah. But I just think of him as Bonesaw from Spider-Man in 2002.
Yeah,
as somebody that did not follow wrestling closely, that was the cameo that I knew. A couple of other awesome historical events that took place on November 15th. This day in 1777, the Continental Congress approved the Articles of Confederation after 16 months of debate. And in 1939, President Roosevelt helped lay the cornerstone of funding, I guess, for the Jefferson Memorial. So some really...
You're listening to The Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Matt Nair on Air.
Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome the one and only Frank Hermans, who is live in the studio, and I will definitely let him be Frank. It's also a bar band Friday night, so Terry Barr joins the show with new music and fun convo.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8. Earl Ingram.
Don from Milwaukee.
I enjoy your show right now at a time like this. You are great therapy for me. I don't know what I'd do without you guys.
We enjoy you as well. That's the importance of civic media and this platform. And Sandy and I take this seriously. We're going to continue to do whatever it is we can to make sure that people like you continue to get your voices heard.
The Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings 8 to 10 on your local civic media radio station and on the app. This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network. This is the Buzz of the North, WBZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.